cannot do that. You cannot give this guy what he wants.
Push him out.
We are talking about the safety of the President of the United States.
You're talking about a hell of a lot more than that, sir.
Hello, friends. It's now I think this would be episode 29. It's episode 29, your double subscription show for the week. And joining us for this show, we have very special guest, Sam Chris.
Hi, how are you doing?
We are not going to be talking about Hegel. We're not going to be talking about Lacan. Actually, we probably are.
I can't guarantee that.
We probably are. But what we're really talking about is the incredibly shitty Gerard Butler action film, London Has Fallen. We're talking with our official London correspondent, Sam Chris.
Yeah, I'm a real-life Londoner, born and bred, and I love nothing more than to see my own city being destroyed by weirdo terrorists.
Also joining me, as always, is Felix Peterman.
Hey, everybody.
And Matt Chrisman.
Hello, mates.
I just want to say to all the people that are turning in, all the trolls, all the people, you know, you guys don't fucking get in 1,000 years gonna be gone. Our premium episodes are still gonna be here.
Felix is, of course, making reference to the climax of the film London Has Fallen.
In more ways than one, because I know that I also climaxed.
There were several moments of climax for me in this movie. Several cleanup moments, I'll call them, during London Has Fallen.
I'm glad I didn't see it in the theater. That's all I know.
Yeah. Look, if I saw London Has Fallen in the theater, I would have needed a tarp. All I'm saying,
the people sitting in front of me, it would have been like a Gallagher concert for them.
I mean, I did actually see London Has Fallen in the cinema with shout out to my friend Anna. We went and got fucking obliterated afterwards because of the sheer kind of stink of awfulness that the film conjured, but that could also have been cum.
Okay, London Has Fallen is an awful film, but I also think it's kind of a great film. Maybe we'll disagree, I don't know. But for reference, let's set this up here. London Has Fallen is the sequel to the 2013 film Olympus Has Fallen.
With all due respect, I'm the best hope you've got.
Olympus Has Fallen came out in 2013. It was directed by Antoine Fuqua and starred Gerard Butler as Secret Service agent Mike Banning, who has to, like, you know, he's basically in the Bruce Willis, the John McClane, except he's in the White House, and North Korean terrorists have taken it over and taken the president hostage. And he's alone, he's the only man left after the rest of the Secret Service has been blown the fuck away. And he saves the president. In the sequel, I don't think anyone asked for, he travels with Aaron Eckhart's President Asher to London, to attend the funeral of the British Prime Minister. And wouldn't you know it, they're attacked by terrorists again, and he's the only man that can get the job done.
All right, so I want to set up the relationship between Gerard Butler and Aaron Eckhart in this film. The writer of this movie, he was held in captivity for the first 25 years of his life, and he was only allowed to watch, like, B episodes of Miami Vice and more forgotten Arnold movies like Eraser. So every time they're supposed to set up the president and Gerard Butler's relationship, it's like they're doing some masculine activity, like they're in the gym or they're drinking beer, and the president's like, how do you do it, Banner? Gerard Butler,
what did they make you out of?
Yeah, what are you made out of? And then
bourbon and poor choices.
This is literally a line in the movie. Like,
yeah, no, he's a bourbon bastard.
He's a true bourbon bastard because every time Gerard Butler bests the president, he's like, why don't you go call your boyfriend, faggot? It's like they're supposed to do this, like, homophobic taunting, but it's There's never an actual joke. It's just like the president's top protective agents repeatedly calling him a homosexual.
Yeah, both of the screenplays, both Olympus Has Fallen and London Has Fallen, it feels like every time they interact, the script says, witty banter here, and they forget to add it. And then on the set, they're like, they got to shoot that scene, and they're like, oh, fuck, we forgot to write anything. You guys just improv. Because that's what I imagine Aaron Eckhart and Gerard Butler would come up with on the fly.
The president will go, we got to get out of the gym, Agent Banner. I have to sign a bill. And Gerard Butler, his Scottish accent slightly slipping, will go, what bill are you signing into law? The bill where you get married to your boyfriend?
I think my favorite line of dialogue in the film is the bit where they're like tearing through a city street in London, crash into a terrorist, and his head just kind of breaks through the window into the car.
Yes.
And he screams, fuck you! And then the guy just screams, fuck me! No, fuck you! Like, that's the kind of intellectual level that the film is on. They couldn't even come up with like some kind of James Bond, well, I guess he got fucked kind of dialogue. He's just, no, fuck you! Fuck everything!
He should have been wearing a helmet. As Sam is referencing, like, this movie, and Sam and Felix are referencing, this movie is sort of a throwback to the 80s action canon.
But stupider! It's dumber than those movies even were.
It's the fucking dumbest film I've ever seen in my life. I think it's the dumbest film as possible to make.
Absolutely. It's the stupidest thing ever. It's aggressively stupid in a way that none of those movies were. Like, took at something that's objectively dumb, like Commando. Commando still has moments that have wit in them. Like, Sully, remember when I told you I'd kill you last? I lied. Or when he throws the fucking steam pipe through the bad guy and goes, let off some steam, Bennett. If this movie had had that same scene, he would have thrown the pipe at him and been like, yeah, fuck you.
And also there was like the villain in Commando is at least kind of interesting. He was like this fat guy wearing a mesh shirt.
Yeah, the weird fey Australian. Yeah.
Let's not forget he has a dog collar that he's wearing in Commando as well.
He's definitely a daddy dom, but in all the Has Fallen movies, the villain is always like, like, in the first movie, it's, like, just this soulless North Korean 20s... He's, like, the ultra-ambitious lanyard wearer of North Korea, because he becomes the top terrorist agent. In this movie, it's, like, an evil Pakistani. But in both movies, their entire character is, like, I hate America. I hate Western civilization, moreover, in this one.
You know, Like we described, this movie is trying to be like sort of a throwback to the 80s action formula of sort of balls to the wall, bourbon bastard, jingoistic, shoot 'em up. But it fails in multiple levels. Chief among them is the complete failure in the relationship between Gerard Butler, Agent Mike Banning, and the president played by Aaron Eckhart. In a true 80s action movie, there should be way more homoeroticism between them. And they try to have some in this movie, but the chemistry between Butler and Eckhart is like two pieces of dried toast being rubbed together. It's just, you know, they don't pull it off.
Well, I mean, I've got a theory about this, but I might have to save it for the close reading part at the end, because it's a banger.
Let's get into the plot. Like I said, President Asher is called away.
You know, I had literally no idea that was his name. He's just called the president, like, for every second of the film. Where's the president?
He is called away. Like, it begins, he has a very close relationship with his Secret Service agent. Obviously, they went through a stressful time together and Olympus Has Fallen. But at the beginning of the movie, Agent Mike Banning is pondering retirement. He has a wife at home, a child on the way. And he's going to retire after this one last mission. And the president gets called away at the drop of a hat because the British Prime Minister dies unexpectedly.
I love the stuff with Gerard Butler and his wife, you know, talking about the kids, where like the kind of the subtly bitchy wife is just kind of saying, oh, husband, you shouldn't have put like mounted machine guns around our baby's car, because that's the only thing you care about is kind of weaponry. Like, this is how you know that he's actually a good guy and not a kind of insane mass murderer, is because he's going to have a kid soon, and so he's surrounding the kid with fucking high-octane weaponry.
You know, he's a man that takes home security and home improvement very seriously, because he's a professional. So, Agent Mike Banning and his true love, President Asher, are called away on moment's notice to, like, this giant funeral for the British Prime Minister, of which every world leader is attending. And I don't know if you're thinking what I'm thinking, but this would be the perfect opportunity for some kind of massive terrorist attack. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happens. And in, I think, my favorite, this is my favorite, this is my first big, like, cleanup sequence in the movie. My favorite sequence, they introduce five or six world leaders, one at a time. You have the Canadian Prime Minister and his wife are in a car together, sitting in traffic. You have the Japanese Prime Minister, also caught in traffic. You have the French guy, he's on a boat for some reason and wants to wait for a little while longer. And my favorite, the Italian Prime Minister, is on the top of Westminster Abbey, is it? With, like, a 20-year-old woman, and he's just grassing her up, basically. He's giving her a private tour, of course, with this beautiful young woman. So they introduce all these world leaders at various landmarks around London on their way to the British Prime Minister's funeral, only to immediately kill them. And his bomb after bomb explodes all across London.
Well, yeah, because
London.
The French and the Italian Prime Ministers, they care too much about fucking to care about, you know, mounting machine guns on every conceivable post anywhere around them. Whereas the Japanese and Canadian ones, you know, they just like to kind of sit in cars and be relaxed and hang out. So, you know, they kind of deserve to die because they're not Gerard Butler.
Yeah, right at the beginning, we get the pure fantasy of there's only America and England, our great allies, left to confront terrorism, right? So basically, the president and Gerard Butler, they're pulling up to the funeral, and then it all goes down. And sort of similar how in Olympus Has Fallen, there's a scene in that movie where there's a whole bunch of tourists in front of the White House, the stereotypical Asian tourists just clacking away pictures. But then when they get the go code, they all just drop their cameras, pull out Uzis, and just start spraying everybody. It ruled.
Here it's cops, you know? It's like kind of London policemen, and they're all the terrorists. And then later on, there's like some US Green Berets, but they're also like terrorists in disguise. It's like this weird kind of fantasy where, you know, you get to shoot up cops and like our brave and heroic troops, but it's okay because they were baddies in disguise.
Yeah, it's like they did like a sexual role-playing game with the terrorists. what if you put on a London Bobby outfit and I spray you with a Spaz 12 and make your body convulse with automatic shotgun pellets?
Oh, I forget, best of all, the best world leader hit is the Angela Merkel character is like standing in front of Buckingham Palace watching the changing of the guards, and then out of nowhere one of the guards just whips out the machine gun and just like lights her up.
Boom, that's what you get, bitch. That's what you get for allowing Berlin to fall.
That's number three, isn't it?
Yeah, it's already fallen. She's already given it to all of them.
She's given it to all the refugees.
Yeah, what the fuck, do better.
so this terrorist plot has basically been a year's long effort to infiltrate probably no less than 1,000 agents into the London Metropolitan Police Department, all of whom same time just pull out guns and just start fucking.
It's a piece of cake.
So, well, yeah, it's a Pakistani arms dealer, right? Like, those people infiltrate the government the whole time.
But wait a second, Sam, maybe you can fill me in on this. I thought London police officers didn't carry guns. So where the hell are they getting all these fucking grenade launchers from?
Well, I'd have guessed. I'd say they're getting them from the nefarious Pakistani arms dealer, which is so easily able to overpower the normal London police, who are armed with like a ruler and a bit of wood, and they hit naughty children behind the ears with them when they don't play by the rules in football. So,
like, the day of the terrorist go attacks, day zero day, like half of the London Police Department shows up for the funeral duty armed, and I'm just thinking the cops that aren't in on it, they're like, hey. Why do you have a gun today? You're like, no, it's nothing. Don't worry about it.
No, it's a tour for me. I got it at Tesco. I'm giving it to my son, my son after work, mate. Don't worry about it.
If they called this movie Tesco Has Fallen and it took place entirely in a Tesco, we would be giving it a glowing review right now.
5 stars.
Oh, God. That's the greatest film ever made.
Terrorists have taken the chips.
So, like, as this plot unfurls, like, similar to how Olympus Has Fallen, a small group of North Koreans are able to take the White House hostage, and, like, there's nothing that the military can do about it. In this film, basically the entire city of London is taken over by terrorists, and there's nothing anyone can do about it save for the bourbon bastard himself, Mike Banning, and President Asher, who are, like, behind enemy lines now, on the run in a city that's completely overrun by terrorists. There is a very cool action scene, I thought, at least, where they try to flee in the Marine One helicopters. But you think they're safe, right? They're, like, you know, in a helicopter getting away from all the small arms fire. But no, on the rooftops of every other building in London are terrorists firing Stinger missiles at the helicopters. And they're able to evade them using some fancy flying and the flares for only a little bit. But the two escort helicopters eventually have to sacrifice themselves to save the president before they finally go down in, I don't know. What's the big park in the middle of London, Sam?
Yeah, that would be Hyde Park.
Hyde Park.
But, like, kind of going back a moment to, like, you know, like, the initial wave of attacks. Like, what I found... Okay, so, like, immediately afterwards, you have this shot of a newsreader going... you know, hundreds of people are dead in a terrorist attack, which has decimated most of the known landmarks in London, which is kind of cool. It's like saying, you know, oh, there might be some landmarks that we don't know about yet. But, like, actually, when you think about it, like, they hardly fucking blow up anything. Like, okay, like they destroy the Chelsea Bridge, like, the least famous bridge in London. That's got the Japanese Prime Minister on it. There's, like, some fight around St. Paul's Cathedral. They blow up Westminster Abbey, but not the House of Parliament, not Big Ben. The London Eye is fine. And then there's this scene where this kind of big telecommunications tower just suddenly explodes. And I've never fucking seen this thing in my life. It's not in London. They have a sequence in which a famous London landmark that doesn't exist is blown up. And that's how much respect this film seems to have for where I've lived my entire life.
Well, they're setting up the sequel. Stonehenge Has Fallen.
Just a bunch of lads just pushing over one of the rocks.
Yeah, they're like, we infiltrated the park custodian program. And they just start spraying druids.
But while the attack is going down, they're sort of like they keep cutting away to, like, there's sort of like London Central Command where they're watching all this on monitors. You know the scene in the action movie where it's like Houston and NASA. It's just a bunch of people on computers watching shit on monitors, and they're like, "We've lost control,
oh, bloody
mate.
Hell!
We've lost control, mate. It's mad, isn't it?
Oh, this isn't on at all. We can't have this."
So they realize London has been completely taken over by terrorists, right? And then they get the bright idea to, like, do the air raid sirens, like in the Blitz. Get everyone to stay, like, we're going old school. It's the one, like, you know, network that the hackers haven't gotten into.
Well, so yeah, they need to get all the cops off the street, otherwise Gerard Butler is just going to kill everyone in a police uniform he sees.
So they go, they're like, we're instituting martial law, like a curfew is in effect, blow those air raid sirens. And what I liked about that is it was at the point in the movie where, like, the director was saying, we can't afford any more extras. Get all these people off the set. So it leaves it completely desolate for, like you said, Gerard Butler and President Asher to shoot their way through London. So they're trying to get away from the terrorists. And what I like about this is they're like, we got to get to a safe house. We got to get to a safe house. It's the only place we'll be safe. And I was sort of thinking, well, you could just basically go anywhere and you'd be safe. There's not that many terrorists. London is a fucking enormous city. Just, like, go in someone's house and be like, yo, can we just camp out here until this ship blows over? And as we see, going to the safe house is the worst thing you could do, because that's what the traitors already know where that is. And of course there is a traitor, obviously. And if you've seen a single motion picture in your life, you can guess who it is from the very first second that they're on screen.
Yeah, he's like, he might as well be, like, reading a Pakistani to English phrase book. Urdu, I mean, sorry, I'll do better.
So the second I need to clean myself moment, that wasn't an action scene comes for me. It was sort of about halfway through the movie where Gerard Butler and Aaron Eckhart, they have a brief moment of respite in the safe house where they think they're safe. And they have a moment of sort of manly bonding and dialogue. And Aaron Eckhart's President Asher says, he like takes out his phone and he's like, "Mike, you know, you're going to be a dad soon. It's the best thing in the world, you know." He's like, "My boy."
Oh, God, I love this,
man. My boy. You know, he sends me these funny jokes on my phone every day. It's just a little thing between us. You know, maybe his mother wouldn't approve. Some of them are pretty dirty. But, you know, it's just this little thing we have. What I loved about that is, like, this is what the fuck we're fighting for against these terrorists. Memes. Memes. And he should have been like, "Agent Mike, you ever heard of Dad Boy? Oh shit, here he come."
I love the bit he says afterwards where, like, he's giving some kind of, you know, real man-to-man advice, like when the women aren't listening, so that they can be kind of like really genuine with each other. I actually wrote some of it down because it was the most kind of insipid, banal bullshit. He says, "Yeah, this is what you need to teach your son. Never criticize, always encourage, and treat others as you wish to be treated." Which is, yeah, like this is the kind of ancient wisdom of the Anglo-American tradition. Like, don't say things are bad.
Yeah, this is what we're fighting against. The terrorists want to criticize our children.
And they want to say they're not special. They want to take away our participation trophies.
Yeah, there's a video. The movie should start with like a video of Bin Laden in a cave, and he's like, "I stand against helicopter parenting." We should go back to spanking kids.
Because the arms dealer, he's like a good old-fashioned patriarch. He arranged his daughter's wedding, as is proper, you know, because there's a lower rate of divorce, traditional values. And then in a kind of feminist movement, the Americans blow up his whole wedding with a drone strike for being problematic.
The terrorist is like Ross Duttat.
Olympus Has Fallen 3, the Benedict option.
Well, what did you guys think about the portrayal of the villains in this movie? I thought it was sort of savvy in a way, because they were obviously Muslim, but they weren't too Muslim. Like, if Michael Bay had directed this movie, there would have been multiple scenes of like the call to prayer and them bowing, like in a montage of, like, you know, people being executed, or like, you know, school children mowed down. And in this movie, I thought they sort of coded the main villain as being sort of cosmopolitan. He's an arms dealer. You know, his motive is revenge and profit, not so much as jihad. I don't know. Am I wrong in this? What did you guys think of the villains in this movie?
Well, I mean, that is sort of the 21st century Hollywood workaround of wanting to use the sort of easy villain of Islamic terrorism, but not wanting to fall in the trap of getting condemned for being racist, because nobody in Hollywood wants to be racist. So you kind of gild it, and it's like, yeah, he's not a terrorist. He's not ideological. He's just a guy who happens to be Pakistani and sells weapons to terrorists. And that's why he's bad. And then he wants to destroy everybody out of revenge, personal revenge. It doesn't implicate Islam, but it allows them to use those tropes that they know lizard-brained audiences have an instant reaction to.
Yeah, but it's like, it's pretty flimsy, you know, like they just start referring to them as terrorists, like, as soon as anything happens. What they are is mercenaries, right?
Yeah, it's a classic fig leaf thing. It's like, it's enough to not get denounced by, you know, David Denby or whatever, but it gets the audience where you want them to be in terms of just terrified of Muslims. Which that is a response that audiences that they will definitely, you know, have, and then you
yeah
can
I mean
work
like,
with
it goes
that.
Like full Clash of Civilizations at the end with
oh
the,
god yeah oh well, right we get to yeah, the end. You know, yeah. So good
you've tried to kill us for a long time, but you know we're our children and our children's children, you know, like they're doing all this for the kids, right, for the unborn white children back home. Yeah.
Mike Banning's child specifically.
Mike Banning's kid is like that the child in those white genocide memes where it says like, "We're fighting for her."
A thousand years from now, our kids are going to be sending each other memes, and you're going to be gone.
New memes you'll have no idea about. You're still looking at lolcats in your shitty third world toilet.
We're going to build a participation trophy that reaches to the moon.
Yeah, it is. This is the new liberal hawkishness. This is like the new Scoop Jackson vision. like meme happy helicopter parented children just obliterating Islam.
Well, I want to talk about the climax of this movie, right, where President Asher is taken by the terrorists, and their brilliant plan is that they're going to, like, execute him on live television, like, you know, live stream to the world, and they're like, the people in the Joint Chiefs of Staff are, like, watching it in the panic room or whatever, and they're like, oh my god, they're torturing him, but they're really just punching him, and they're like, what do you think of that now, President? Not so fucking presidential now, are you? And they take fucking forever to do it.
Like, when they've got the knife to his throat, and, you know, they say any last words, and he reads out the oath of office of the United States President.
Which is, I'm sorry, which is a, which is, that's a little, you know, call out to the fans of Olympus Has Fallen, which is in the original movie. My favorite fucking scene in that movie is when Melissa Leo, who plays the Secretary of Defense, the North Koreans, like, drag her out by her hair to, like, execute her in front of the White House. They're dragging her out, gun to the head, and she starts just going, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
My favorite thing about this, too, is, like, the premise of them doing this. They're like, once we kill the president, everyone in the world is going to be afraid. But they forget that the universe that this movie takes place in, just, like, every like, 2 years, the entire cabinet of every G6 nation gets obliterated by machine guns. Like, I don't think people would be afraid of that anymore.
Something of this magnitude, it took years to plan, and we had days.
It's a bloodbath. How did they do this, Mike?
We only have to get it right once. Today they got it right way more than that.
They're like, well, last time they killed the president, they shoved a pipe bomb up his asshole and shot his body 500 times, but they beheaded him on camera this time. I guess this time we have to submit to Islam. I mean, terrorism.
They're just sending all their death row prisoners into, like, cabinet positions because they know they won't stick around for long.
But in the next one, I'm pretty sure that once they get a high-ranking figure with a gun to his head, they're just going to be like, a scout is trustworthy, brave, loyal, friendly, clean, kind, and reverent.
They're gonna get the Secretary of, like, Commerce and stick him into a cannon. And they're gonna, like, we're gonna shoot you. They're gonna shoot you over a wall.
They implied that the new British Prime Minister is Jeremy Clarkson. Like, they call him Prime Minister Clarkson, which like, suggests if there's a British PM dying in the next one, his last words are going to be, "Oh, that's a bloody good car."
Yeah. They're going to be, like, aiming an anti-air gun at him against the wall, and he'll be like, "Another thing, Italian women are stupid."
We're going to find out if a McLaren can race against a bullet.
the scene where one of the terrorists on a motorcycle, like, gets clotheslined by, like, a steel wire, and his head pops off, and then it'd be like, that's what you get from Japanese manufacturing. But I want to talk about to Sam, you know, our London correspondent. What did you think about the rather shabby portrayal of the pride of the British military, the SAS, in this film?
Yeah, I mean, like there's a bit at the beginning where they, you know, like, when the Americans are preparing for this visit and they're just kind of looking at maps and going, Christ, it's a shit show. We're all going to die in there. But then one of them just kind of pipes up and goes, well, I mean, the Brits are world class, right? Yeah. The Brits are world class because they don't want to, like, you know, offend America's oldest and greatest ally by pointing out just how shit we are. But
no, don't say that. You guys are okay.
Yeah, we're like America's kind of bumbling sidekick. You know, you gave us, like, Helmand Province in Afghanistan, and we kept on fucking up, and so you had to take over again. But yeah, like there's a lot of British cops being killed in this film. Like more British cops are killed than I think any other type of person. You know, it's this kind of, this weird kind of subdued anger against British police that seems to be coming out, which is weird because I don't know if many Americans have had really negative experiences with, you know, British bobbies with tits on their head.
But the SAS too, they kind of get sunned as well. And, like, Mike Dunn,
they keep,
like,
on dying.
He's like, give me that gun, I'm going in. They're like, you what, mate? Are you mad?
You're bloody mental, mate.
Mike Banning definitely, like, cucked the SAS because they, like, they, after the president gets captured, when the terrorists, again, in their brilliant plan, just decide to T-bone their SUV, the SAS is like, all right, you just need to take a load off and get on a lorry and go watch Man U. And he's like, listen to me, you English cocksucker. You're going to have to kill me or I'm going to rescue my friend.
Yeah, it's like, I would die for the president, so you're going to die too. And then they're just kind of faced with such kind of high T intensity. They just kind of trot along and follow him and they all get shot by terrorists. And like him and the main Scottish SAS guy are the only ones who survive, I think.
Yeah, they just, like, they're the most elite military force in the UK, but they just, they can't resist a 45-year-old man yelling at them.
A guy who is technically just, he's technically, like, a security guard.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the Has Fallen series, because it turns out that, like, the single most elite fighting force in the universe is the Secret Service, which, I'm sorry, they just arrange the schedule of the president and find hookers in the country that he's going to be in.
Waste money on Bernie Sanders, right?
Oh, God, I'm still pissed about that.
Still Agent pissed Banning about my precious tax dollars. Got Bernie Sanders' detail, and he's like, I can't stand fucking putting my life on the line for this un-American weakling.
Yeah, like, he's trying to do banter with Bernie, and he's like, hey, Bernie, after this, why don't you go kiss your boyfriend on the mouth? And Bernie's like, what? I don't get it. I'm not a homosexual. What are you trying to imply?
Every day, same damn joke. Seriously? The hell they make you out of?
Bourbon and poor choices.
You pick a name yet?
We were thinking Benjamin if it was a boy.
Really? Hell no!
If it's a girl, maybe.
One bit of banter. Speaking of banter, my favorite, like the only actual joke this movie attempts is when they're in the safe house and the bad guys are coming and Banning has put the president in another room while he fights them all, and it's down to the last one and it's like, oh no, he's gonna get hurt, but then the president comes out and shoots the bad guy and Banning goes, I was wondered when you were gonna come out of the closet.
Yes.
Yeah, hell yeah, baby.
Hell yes.
I wanna go back a little bit to what Will said about the Secret Service being the only elite fighting force on Earth. But that it's not even that. It's like the Secret Service are all scrubs because they're the first ones to die. Every time they see like a tourist with a machine gun bulging out of their windbreaker, they're like, duh, I guess this is normal, and they just get fucking owned. But it's one guy.
No, it's
one guy and he can't retire. If he retires, like, the president is going to go do a photo op at, like, a fish refinery, and guys are gonna pull out katanas out of smallmouth bass and just fucking own him.
Unless
Banning is there.
Well, yeah, no, you're right. It really is only just Agent Mike Banning who knows what he's doing, because in the original Olympus Has Fallen, the entire Secret Service detail of the White House, they're like basically the Philadelphia Police Department of this movie. There's a scene where, like, they're all running out onto the White House lawn, and the North Koreans just, like, slide open the door of a van and just whip out a 50 cal and just, like, in one scene, just, like, do, 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 just waste, like, 40 Secret Service guys. It ruled.
Yeah, the Secret Service guys have no answer for being shot at. They like, run into the bullets. Their only response when shot at is, like, duh, I guess we have to intercept those bullets. Except for Banning.
Yeah, the thesis basically is that you have anyone involved in a violent situation like this will die unless they have sufficient tea. And the only man on Earth with enough tea to withstand it is Banning. He's the only man.
We sort of see it in the interactions. The difference between the regular agent's interactions with the president and Banning. Like, Banning's interactions with the president, they're all very high tea. It's all like every scene they're like drinking whiskey and doing bench presses, and Banning's like, yeah, it's not bad if you were a girl. and there's like another Secret Service agent there, and the president will say something like, next time that we get attacked, you should let Banning die. Not really, I'm just kidding. And the beta Secret Service will be like, believe me, sir, we don't understand Banning ourselves. They don't have a clever repartee. They don't call the president a pussy or a gay man. They can't come up with anything on the fly. Only Banning can do it.
But yeah, they're not made of bourbon, you know. Like Banning's this kind of whiskey creature who's just kind of drunk so much of it that he's kind of stained this kind of dark amber color, and he's just made entirely of whiskey. And the kind of the water men that surround him can never really kind of, you know, alcohol floats on water. That's the important thing.
By the way, it's why Jared Butler was an excellent casting for the role of Mike Banning, because it looks like he's drunk a whole lot more whiskey in the intervening years between Olympus Has Fallen and London Has Fallen.
Like he looks like he's been like breaded and deep fried.
Yeah, he looks like a Scotch egg.
Given
literally
that he's Scottish, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah. He's a Katsu agent. But I want to talk about Felix. You said Agent Banning cannot retire, or else basically the governments of both the United States and United Kingdom will be not long for this world. As I said in the beginning of the movie, Banning has like already written up his resignation letter, and he's like, okay, I'm going to do this one last thing for my boy, President Asher, and he's just waiting to sign it. And at the end of the movie, Morgan Freeman, we forgot that he's in this movie, he plays the vice president, and I don't think he was on set with any of the other actors for this movie. I think he showed up for one day. It was like the Krusty the Clown scene, basically. It was like, hey, I'm talking vice president. Hey, we don't negotiate with terrorists. All right, are we done? Bye, I'm gone. Morgan Freeman gets a scene at the end of this movie where he delivers this sort of monologue into the camera addressing the world. Why the vice president is doing this, I have no idea. President Asher lived through this ordeal.
President Asher is reading Encyclopedia Dramatica with his son.
So Morgan Freeman delivers this kind of monologue at the very end of the movie where he's like, it's a dangerous world and there are no good choices. Some people say that we should retreat from this dangerous world. That, however, is the worst thing we can do. And as he's saying this, they're like cutting away to a drone blowing up the bad guy, like the main bad guy. He's just sitting there drinking tea in some fucking toilet in Afghanistan, or Pakistan rather. And Morgan Freeman's like, why don't you look outside, friend? And the guy looks up and he sees like the glint of a Hellfire missile before it obliterates him. But like, so Banning listens to Morgan Freeman's inspiring speech about how, you know, America needs to lead in the world and we can't retreat from our obligations as a hegemonic military superpower. And he just hits delete on that resignation letter. He's like, yeah, we have to keep engaging with the world. And it's like, dude, you're a Secret Service agent. And you're only engaging with, like, a couple people in our government. That's it. You just travel the world.
Yeah, we have a whole lot of it. We know that there's going to be another massive terrorist attack attempt to kill the president, like, 2 weeks from now. It's guaranteed to happen.
But like what Morgan Freeman says in that speech, though, he says, we owe it to our children and their children to engage with the world. Like, he's setting it up as this kind of like generational racial struggle of like kind of you know, the pure white race and then token POC like himself.
It's woke as hell that they got Morgan Freeman to deliver those lines.
Yeah, really.
But I mean, what this kind of is like he's kind of passing on the baton. You know, this is a civilizational conflict. So Gerard Butler's kid, I reckon, in the next film, is going to be kind of waddling out there in his nappies, firing round after round into mass terrorists and just kind of growing up like the father.
Well, he'll be trained from an early age, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, yeah, because you know, his crib is surrounded with, you know, security cameras and armed men ready to, like, twist a knife into the heart of anyone who comes near.
Like, a string tied to a stuffed animal that, the like, is attached to the pin on a hand grenade as well. So, I mean, I think that accurately describes the plot of London Has Fallen, but Sam, you are the master of close reading. So, what is your deeper meta reading of London Has Fallen?
Well, I mean, as someone who had a physical fist fight with Slavoj Žižek one time, I thought I might kind of, you know, try and do a kind of general psychoanalytic reading of what's going on in this film. And like what the terrorist arm dealers, etc., are trying to do is, what they really want to do is they want to take a knife and cut off the president's head. And you know, like everyone else who dies in the film, the whole of London, it's a kind of sideshow to this main thing, which is that the bad men want to take a knife and cut off the president's head. And you know, like the president is obviously this kind of object of desire for the Gerard Butler character. You know, he'll do anything to protect it. But like, you know, as you guys point out, the kind of, you know, homoerotic camaraderie they have is, it doesn't kind of work. It doesn't make sense. It's kind of, it feels false as a relationship between two people, because my reading of it is that this is a film about castration anxiety, and the president in the film is not a human individual. He represents Gerard Butler's penis. and it's a film in which, you know, this kind of, this foreign, dangerous, threatening father who's lost his own children wants to cut off Gerard Butler's dick, and only once he's prevented him from cutting off his dick can he go back and see his child. He needs to save the president so that he can fuck and procreate.
Now, you mentioned that Aaron Eckhart is just a representation of Gerard Butler's penis. I think that's excellent casting, because Aaron Eckhart, that sort of divot he has in his chin is very glands-like, I think.
Oh, dude, totally.
He's like the only man whose face has been circumcised.
I have a political reading on this to go along with the Freudian reading there. And you look at this movie, and it has basically the same politics as most action films made in the United States. You know, a threatening foreign world, the need for virile American masculinity to combat it, blah, blah, blah. But it puts it on the surface in a way that you don't usually see. With Mike Banning's speech as he's choking out the terrorists about, in 1,000 years, we'll still be here. And then the amazing juxtaposition of Morgan Freeman talking about how we need to engage with the world while a drone bomb blows up a fucking cafe. But it does it in a way that is singularly gross and ugly and inelegant. Like, it has all the shit that a Michael Bay movie has, only Michael Bay movies have this brightness and speed and wit about them that kind of makes it fun. London Has Fallen is just grim and witless and ugly the whole way through. Like, it's all very dark. It's poorly shot. Like, Mike Banning, when he kills bad guys, he doesn't snap the neck quickly. He doesn't shoot them. He tends to stab them a bunch with a knife. And it's very hard as a viewer to really, like, root for somebody who's just stabbing people all the time. There's a reason that usually in movies the guy stabbing people is the bad guy, because there's something about knife violence that's very intimate and distasteful. But Mike Banning is, like, literally trying to get information out of this guy, and he's, like, twisting a knife in his stomach back and forth. Like, he's not usually the kind of light torture that they do in these movies to try to get things out of bad guys. It's not that gruesome. So it's like, it takes everything that's implicit in American action movies and puts it to the surface in the most gross way possible. And I think it's interesting to note that this movie was not directed by an American. It was directed by an Iranian Swede named Babak Najafi. And the theory is
very true.
And there's two theories for me. Either he's just really shitty at directing, he doesn't know what he's doing, which is absolutely possible. And the other is that he made it shitty on purpose to make the ideological American action film grotesque and not Bay-like charming and smooth.
Is it too early to say that Babak is the new Abbas Kiarostami of Iranian cinema?
Time will tell. I think it's certainly something that we can discuss in the future. See what he does next.
Felix, do you have a final reading of the film?
My reading, yeah, look, some people take the extremely sexual approach, such as our friend Sam. Some people take the extremely political approach, such as our friend Matt, but my reading is a little bit, you know, shout out to Ron Fournier, both sides do it, the truth is in the middle. Okay, so the forces of Islam, I mean terrorism, are descending upon the West. They poisoned the beta, like, Tory or Labor Third Way Prime Minister, and no one knows, and he has to replace Jeremy Clarkson, who is going to use his first address to Parliament to talk about how much he fucking hates Polish people. The president who, like, reifies his commitment to America by making these speeches where he's like, a tragedy befell us, but we cannot forget that we wrote the Constitution. And people applaud like it's miracle shit. They represent the West, but the West is reified by its acceptance of pluralism, represented by when Agent Rex Bannon, Rex Banner.
This isn't a very happy birthday for Rex Banner.
calls the leader of the free world a homo repeatedly. contrast with Islam, where no one is allowed to be gay. In fact, the hacker you see in the wheelchair was crippled because they found him searching for gay websites. Made him be a hacker for Al-Qaeda, and he had to immolate himself to try to kill the forces of acceptable militarist pluralism in the president and Agent Rex Banner. In the future, Vice President Morgan Freeman makes a speech where he's like, we cannot allow Islam to take over the world. We need to be friends with everybody, and if need be, murder fucking everybody. As seen by the scene with the drone strike, where they're like, they, of course, one of the VOs is like, 0 in, 1 9er, we got 0 civilians around here, we're only gonna kill good targets. But you can assume that because the movie sort of starts with an arranged marriage, the head terrorist just got off the phone telling his gay son he has to get married.
My final reading of the movie is not my own reading. I'm just going to do a reading. This is a user review from IMDb that I found for London Has Fallen that I think is quite good. This is a one-star review. The title of this is, What is this? A Trailer Movies? It's by Jim McBakery from Australia. He writes of London Has Fallen, first of all, this movie, far, far away from realism.
I wouldn't say that. I would not say that at all.
To be Lacanian here, it expresses the real of the American psyche.
Yes, yes. McBakery continues, I meant one person, the U.S. Secret Service, against hundreds of people with AK-47 RPG machine guns. That's made me laugh. So they killed the Queen of England, their armies betrayed the countries, and where is the England army? Not showed up at all in this movie. This movie, I think, wants to send message to all people in the world. The United States is a superpower country, blah, blah, blah. Rambo's still better than this movie. Well, when I watched this movie, I was understand straight to the point. One man, one hero, live happily after ever, and rich, LOL. England has fallen, and U.S. saved it only by one person, and England can't do anything for their countries. This movie really a propaganda and underestimated other countries. England, Japan, France, Italy. As we saw the movie, Italy Prime Minister enjoyed the view with girl, younger woman, and ick, died. The France lazy person and Japanese who produces nice car but got jammed in traffic. Oh man, this movie insulted. Oh man, this movie insulted other nation. I'm not saying it. It movie tells us. This is bad movies.
You know, that is about the level of grammar I would expect from the good people of Australia.
Jim McBakery is wrong. Jim McBakery is Matt V. Brady's username on IMDb.
He's pissed, mate. It's bloody pissed, this film.
It is, but it is a really succinct deconstruction of every technical aspect that is wrong with the movie.
The grammar is bad, but the thoughts are not. So that's London Has Fallen. But before we let you go, Sam, I just want to ask you real quickly. I know you saw that your boy Zizek laid down some knowledge on trans issues.
Hell yeah. Oh,
see, now...
when I face the bathroom, I do not know which door to go in. I claim the dialectic demands a third door. I mean, I wish I were a joke, but that's actually... I tried to do a joke. That's what he fucking says.
Well, Sam...
My friend Ann contacted me from the movie theater.
When I look at toilet, I do not... Do I put head in? Do I put genitals in? It is very confusing time for me. I claim this is the essence of the dialectic.
Now, Sam, when we saw yesterday, it started trending, Slavoj Žižek on trans, I know Felix, Matt, and myself got immediately excited because we misread it as Žižek on trains.
Yeah. the broken machinations of the Otis elevator.
when I dream of the train, it is not the train I am dreaming of, but the experience of riding it.
But Sam, do you have a response to Zizek on trans bathrooms?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got to have to be quite serious about this for about 20 seconds. But like,
that's okay.
Like, there was a recent talk he did in London at the Royal Festival Hall to promote his new book, Against the Double Blackmail, which was on the European migrant crisis, and which he and I have been kind of duking it out with essays in various publications for a couple of months now, which ended with him saying that what I was saying was such a case of slander, pure and simple, that any minimally rational debate becomes impossible. So, I mean, it's good to see Zizek turn into a logic guy. but yeah, in the talk, he hardly ever mentioned the migrants, and he was talking entirely about trans people and bathrooms for the entire time, which is this very bizarre new thing he has. But what's really noticeable is that what he's completely abandoned there is any attempt at providing a kind of new, radical, kind of left-wing, innovative approach to these issues. Like if you read the piece, what he's literally saying is like the most kind of shitty, degraded, kind of idiot, dumbfuck, conservative response to this.
He's like, if this keeps going, we'll be fucking German shepherds in a few years.
Yeah. He goes like, hey, what was to stop me marrying my dog?
My dog is better than my wife, the bitch.
I mean, I'm going to have to go back and read through it more closely to point out, like Lacan was not like a particularly politically radical thinker, even though he claimed to be a Marxist, but you know, you can make Marxist uses of Lacan. But what Zizek's doing, it's a kind of critique that I leveled at him earlier. Like, he'll kind of bandy around words and phrases from psychoanalysis and from theory in general. But when it comes down to it, when he actually wants to make his proper point, it's always something incredibly conservative and just really fucking stupid.
I can't wait to see him on stage with Ted Cruz in the next couple of years and some rally to keep the bathrooms.
There's that photo of I can't remember who the third guy is, maybe Tim Stanley, who's a bow-tie dipshit from the Telegraph, but who said that I have a fine turn of phrase in one of his articles. But it's him, Slavoj Žižek, and Nigel Farage just kind of standing around grinning in the green room before a TV interview. So that's probably not far off.
Slavov is going to speak at David French's Bathroom Con 2016.
But did you know, my friend Ted, he talked to Obama and he say, if you like your job and so on, you may keep this job.
I mean, when you kind of think about it, what is emailing someone's wife but the kind of castrating function of the order of the symbolic?
When the wife goes on Facebook, it is where she sees phantoms of boyfriend's past.
I just wanted to go on tour with Larry the Cable Guy and Jeff Dunham and just
that
go
would
like
be awesome.
Yeah, just be like, who is here? Who is ready to get her done?
As Mark said, the point is to not complain, but to do.
Okay, Sam, thanks so much for coming on the show and talking London has fallen. Would you please come back and talk to us about trains or elevators sometime?
I will talk about any kind of machinery where there's like 300 different types that I can name and categorize.
Wait. I am not letting Sam back on if he endorses Tyson Krupp. No way. No how. Otis. This is an Otis show.
I think that about does it for us, and London has fallen, folks. Until next time, see you later.
Bye-bye.
Peace.
Bye.
I'm here, Buck Collar.
Number 6 on the 10 list.
This man's responsible for more deaths than the plague. Sells arms to every failed state in the world. Has a vast array of connections. Terrorists, mercenaries, corporations.
Mr. Vice President, it's Buck Howard.
Put him through. I thought you would have learned a lesson by now about crawling out of your hole.
Never lifted a finger against you.
You harmed those who have.
I sold triggers, Mr. Trumbull, just like you.
What do you want?
Your president. You can end this right now. Just hand him over.
That's not going to happen.
Then every death from this moment forward will be on your head.